From the Midtown Detroit studios of WDET, this is Detroit Today.
It's almost Halloween, and we're going to celebrate on Detroit Today, first by wrapping up a busy week in the news. The GOP debate, the state roads plan, and Paul Ryan as Speaker of the House in Washington. We'll do it all with Fox 2 News anchor Huel Perkins, the host of the popular Let It Rip. But then we're going to go full on Halloween, with you calling in to tell your favorite Detroit Halloween stories. And then we'll have a curiosity about the city's best ghost stories, and we'll wrap with a preview of John Mosier's Halloween special. Get ready for Trick or Treat tomorrow, but Detroit Today is next, right after the news. So, I have not eaten an apple since Halloween night, 1976. I was about 6 years old, and I was Batman that year. Mind you, I was not the mysterious Dark Knight of the most recent movies. I'm talking about the old TV Adam West Batman, you know, the one that had the weird gray-blue tights and the shiny cape. So, my family, we went to a Halloween party at my school that night, friend's school, down to next to Lafayette Park, and of all the fun that was to be had, my attention was fully and almost solely on bobbing for apples. Now, a lot of people in the audience might not even know what that is, but, you know, before parents worried too much about communicable diseases or accidental drownings, part of Halloween fun was about sticking your head in a tub full of water and trying to bite down on the slick skin of the apples that were floating in it, and pulling out as many as you could. For some reason, I was absolutely fascinated by this activity, and I was pretty good at it. So good that after a bit, I would dunk my head in, and within seconds, apple in mouth, come out looking no doubt just like a suckling pig. And then I'd go back under and do it again, and again, and again, and again. I wasn't just content to just like throw these apples away either. I figured, eat what you catch, right? So I wolfed down apple after apple after apple after apple, and some of them were ripe and some of them were not, and all of them came out of this tub in which all the other children in the school were dunking their heads. I ate literally until I could eat no more, and by the time I got home, my stomach felt bloated, and there was a stale taste in my mouth, and my throat was beginning to swell. Of course, I tried to make it upstairs to the bathroom, but at 6 years old, what were the chances I was going to pull that off? So when the vomit came, it spilled all down the front of my Batman costume. I remember standing there in tears with my mother looking at me, trying to reassure me that it would be okay, but she was wrong. It really wouldn't be okay, at least for a while. I spent much of that night in the bathroom, emptying my stomach of all those apples. Some people, when you ask them about Halloween, they'll tell you about costumes, or they will tell you about parties, or they will tell you about the candy they got. Me, I remember those apples in 1976 and the fact that I have not touched one since. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and happy Halloween. Later in the show, we're going to talk about some of the best ghost stories here in Detroit, and we'll have John Mosier of WDET's Modern Music Show here to talk about his show tonight. But first, I want to wrap the week's news with a friend, Huel Perkins, anchor at Fox 2 News Detroit and host of Let It Rip. Welcome to Detroit Today.
Stephen, good to be here. I can't imagine your schedule. When do you sleep, man?
I don't. I'm a vampire. That's the secret, right? I have the ability to bend time and be in two places at once.
Well, I hope you realize you're speaking to a zombie, because I haven't been to sleep, and I had a long night, but I am going to take a nap as soon as I leave.
Oh, well, there you go. That's right. You don't have to work until the evening, right?
That's right.
Huel, tell me, I shared what I think is a pretty embarrassing Halloween story just now. I want people during the hour to call and tell us their Halloween stories. What do you remember about Halloween, especially Halloween here in Detroit? in the 70s and 80s. I feel like that was sort of a heyday, of course, because that's when I grew up. But tell me, Huell, what do you remember of Halloween? What are your some of your favorite stories?
Well, I'm considerably older than you are. And I grew up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, in a much different environment.
Yeah, sure.
But I grew up in a wonderful neighborhood called Southern Heights. My father was a professor at Southern University in Baton Rouge, and the neighborhood featured families of professors and teachers at the school, and it was relatively large. And trick-or-treating in our neighborhood was simply going to houses of families and people that
people
we knew.
People you knew, right.
And it was a great time. We were free to roam the streets. There was not much traffic. And we felt perfectly safe, and we would just go off in packs of three, four, five, or six, and just walk down the neighborhood to every house. And I would love to collect candy, but you know what? I didn't eat any. I don't like candy, but I love getting
you
it
love
in the bag.
It, right?
I love just getting something in the bag. That was wonderful.
Yeah, but that was true for my kids. When they would trick or treat when they were younger, they loved just the idea of running up to someone's door, holding out the bag, and saying trick or treat. And whatever they put in it was sort of ancillary, right?
Exactly.
That was whatever you got.
And what was always so funny, you know, I'd dress up, I'd have a mask, I'd have a costume, sometimes makeup, but invariably, every time I'd ring the doorbell, "Oh, it's Chipper," which was my nickname.
They would always know
right,
who
always
you
know
were.
Tell your mom and dad that we'll meet them at the...
That's right. You know? It's like, no, I'm supposed to be
exactly.
Frankenstein.
Yeah, I'm Dracula. No, you're not the Chipper.
Right. All right. Well, if you want to share some of your Halloween stories, your Halloween memories with us, give us a call. We'll take those calls all hour. Today, 313-577-1019 is the number, 313-577-1019. What do you remember about Halloween here in Detroit? Maybe from the 70s and 80s, maybe from the 50s and 60s, an era that I wouldn't remember because I wasn't around. So give us a call and join in the fun here. Huell, I want to talk a little about the news this week, the business that the two of us are in. We had another GOP debate this week in Colorado on MSNBC. What I found most interesting about this particular debate was the role that the moderators played and the role that the media ended up playing in the narrative that the different candidates wanted to get across. I couldn't tell if it was planned or not, but boy, when they started in on it, they really got in on it, and I think they landed some pretty good punches.
Oh, no question. I think Ted Cruz had the best line of the night when he was supposedly answering a question about the budget and his refusal to support the budget deal that was just passed early this morning. He went into this diatribe that I think certainly indicated the mood of the crowd. The moderators, I think, made a big mistake. They were not the trained journalists in terms of investigating financial issues. But I think they lost their way. They didn't take control of that debate. Their questions were at time designed, as many of our questions are, designed
right.
to invoke a response,
right.
emotion. Well,
you know about that.
Let it rip, right?
That's the whole premise.
That's the whole premise. That we take people from opposing sides, we put them together to talk about issues and solutions and ideas. But the difference is, I think the moderators, in some sense, or certainly in the view of the audience there, crossed the line. The questions that I think we like to present on Let It Rip are open-ended. They aren't designed to insult. They are designed to provoke,
right.
but not to insult.
Right.
And Ted Cruz just, I think, hit it out of the park. You know, the question you ask me is whether I'm Ben Carson can Ben Carson do math? Can Donald Trump do this? Kasich, why don't you insult the other two on the other side? And I think he clearly expressed what the conservatives in this country feel about the so-called mainstream
about the media. Sure.
They don't trust us.
Right. And they raise a lot of money in the GOP off of that hatred of the media. And I thought, boy, the dollars probably were pouring in.
Ted Cruz immediately sent out an email.
On Wednesday night. That's
absolutely.
Right. Saying, look, you know, help us fight against this. And typically I will push back really hard when I hear conservatives say that. I'm like, you know, listen, most reporters, I think, play it pretty straight, ask good questions of both sides, don't favor one party over another. But boy, I did think I was disappointed by the quality of those questions.
Absolutely. What especially disturbed me was a question. I forget the moderator who asked it, but he was talking to Donald Trump, and he said, "All right, let's get real here. Isn't this a comic book campaign?" That
is an insult. That is an insult.
You know,
that's right.
It was not a quote from somebody else. It was something he was saying to describe Donald Trump, and I thought that crossed the line.
Yeah. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and my guest is Huel Perkins, an anchor with Fox 2 News here in Detroit, also the host of Let It Rip on that station. We are wrapping up the week's news, but we are also talking about the fact that it is Halloween tomorrow, and kids are going to get dressed up, go to parties, go trick-or-treating. If you have memories about Halloween as a kid, I shared an embarrassing memory of me getting sick off of apples in 1976 on Halloween and never having touched an apple since to top the show. If you have a story about Halloween when you were a kid, when you were an adult, when you were a teenager, give us a call, 313-577-1019, to join into that conversation. Again, 313-577-1019. Let's go to Sandy in Detroit. Sandy, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hi. My story of embarrassment is probably more of a story of mistaken identity. When I was in kindergarten, my grandmother made a costume. She took little strips of cream-colored crepe paper and sewed them to a pair of pajamas. Fire retardant. But at the school parade, kids were pointing to me and saying, "Look at the shaggy dog." And I was just humiliated.
Oh, no. What was the costume supposed to be?
A polar bear.
It was supposed to be a polar bear. Oh, no. I know. And when you're a kid, when somebody doesn't get your costume, it's like, that's the worst. You got to wait a whole year to do it all over again, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you for that call, Sandy. Huel, also in the news this week, Paul Ryan finally decided he wanted to be Speaker of the House. This was a job they couldn't give away in Washington, right? John Boehner said, "I don't want it anymore. I'm not dealing with all this craziness. I can't control people in my own party. I certainly can't get the other party to do the things I want to do. I got to go." And then everyone else said, "Well, I don't want it either."
Well, the second in command did want it, but then right. he made the mistake of going on Fox News
right.
and saying, "Well, yeah, this is a political witch hunt. We're going after Hillary. We're getting her poll numbers down." I mean,
that's right.
Huge mistake. So, yeah. You know, he was out. But, you know, I'm hopeful. We had Debbie Dingell on last night, Let It Rip, and she was there.
Yeah.
Voted
against Paul Ryan.
Yes, Paul Ryan was sworn in. She voted against him, as did the man who swore him in, Congressman John Conyers.
Yes, right.
But it says something about this country, the ultimate collegiality of the people in that body.
Yeah.
Yes, they disagree, they argue, they fight, but in the end, they are of the same body.
Right. It's supposed to be, right? They're supposed to figure it out and go do the people's business.
I also like what Paul Ryan said. The first words out of his mouth, "The House is broken."
Yes.
We need to change things.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll see compromise instead of confrontation on his watch.
Right. You know, the other thing I thought was really interesting about what he said was he said, "I'm not going to spend all my time fundraising on the weekends. I'm going to go home and be with my children," which I think plays with a lot of people in this country, but not with politicians. I mean, the Speaker of the House is supposed to be out raising money. That's how, you know, certainly less senior members of Congress get a lot of the money. That's how parties get a lot of the money. I wonder if he will actually be able to pull that off.
I think he will.
That would be a huge change.
It would be a huge change. But I think he did not accept that job except under his own terms.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to be
able
to
do it his way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to the phones here. Kitty in Detroit. Welcome to Detroit Today.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Just wanted to share a story with you guys. Last Halloween, it was my husband, now 50th year anniversary of our first date, and all throughout the night, I'm like telling my friends, like, I really think he's going to propose to me tonight. And
on Halloween?
On Halloween, because that was our first date 6 years ago now. And I'm like, I really think he's going to propose to me. And the clock just ticked on, and it became 2 o'clock. And I'm sitting at the bar with my bartender friend, and I'm like, I really thought he was going to propose to me. And then I turn around, and he hands me the ring, and I'm like, you better get down on one knee or put that ring back in your pocket.
That's right, because I have been waiting all night for you to do this, right?
Yeah.
All right, Kitty, that is a great story. That's a sweet story on Halloween, sweet story that doesn't have to do with candy. Let's go to Barb in Commerce Township. Barb, welcome to Detroit Today.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Mine's not going to be so sweet. Mine was a trick.
Oh, it was a trick. Okay.
It was a trick. My parents wouldn't let me go trick-or-treating, and I had to give out candy. And what I did is I went to the neighbors who had just had 60 little baby mice, and I bought them.
Ooh. Okay.
I put each individual little mouse inside a bag.
Oh, you did not.
With wood chips and a little bag of food.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, mind you, this was 55 years ago. But if it happened today, social services would be banging on the door.
So you passed out mice to kids?
Live mice. I did.
That is a great story.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's not a story. It's true. No. And my mother didn't even know how to deal with it. The next day, people were calling, and it was horrible. It was a horrible event for her.
Oh, my gosh. Did you get into trouble for that, Barb?
With my parents,
yeah. I was going to say, it seems like there should have been some sort of punishment meted out for that.
Yeah. Today, it would be, social services,
right,
et cetera, the police at the door. But
yeah,
back
right.
Then,
someone would have called the cops.
You'd be our lead story tonight on the news.
That's right. Oh, that's right. Little girl passes out mice to, right, to trick-or-treaters.
Exactly.
Barb, thanks very much for that call. That might be the best story I've
Barb,
heard.
I'm never coming to your house, but thank you.
That's right. Stay out of Commerce Township. Don't trick or treat there. Let's take one more call here. Anne in Oxford, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hi, thank you. I'm still kind of blown away by that mice story.
Yes. That is something else.
I can't tap it, but in the late 50s, early 60s, in my neighborhood on the west side of Detroit, there was somebody, apparently they worked for the old Wonder Bread Bakery. You remember that downtown? Well, they had little tiny loaves of Wonder Bread.
Oh.
And instead of wanting candy, every year the first place I wanted to go was to this house.
That gave
sure
out
that
Wonder
I got
Bread.
One of these little tiny loaves. They were just little miniatures, and it was, how weird was that? I must have been such a dork.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
I just wanted these little loaves of Wonder Bread.
Oh, wow. I have never heard of that. What year was this?
Oh, my God. Well, it had to be between like 58 and 62 that I was young enough to be enthralled by little tiny loaves of Wonder Bread.
See, that's a great Detroit story, right? All right. Anne in Oxford, thank you very much for your story. Those are good Halloween stories. See, people in Detroit, Detroiters remember all kinds of wonderful stuff. That's one of the things I really love about this community. Hugh, I'm going to let you go in a second, but I want to ask you, like I ask everybody these days, are we going to get a Rhodes plan sometime in our lifetime? Are we going to get a Rhodes plan before Christmas or maybe next Christmas?
In our lifetime, yes. By Christmas, I don't think so. It's crazy, We're stuck in a pothole in terms of our road plan. We just keep getting stuck, and it's frustrating. It's frustrating, I think, to the governor as well.
Yeah.
Who tried himself, and that there was the failure proposal one. It's okay, you legislature, you guys take it. The House passed some kind of hodgepodge plan.
Yeah.
But I don't think the Senate.
No, I don't think the Senate's going to do it. And I don't think the governor will sign that plan, actually.
No.
$600 million coming out of the general fund. Where are you going to get it? That's going to come from things that already are strapped for resources. So I think they're back to the drawing board. I also think there's a real threat that we could end up with another ballot issue on this next year if the legislators don't get their act together this year to get it on. Next year is an election year. They're not going to put something like a tax increase on the ballot while they're running for election. So,
and that seems to be the basic problem, that the governor unlike, say, John Engler, who was able to control his party
very well.
Rick Snyder is not that kind of governor. Yeah. You know, he's not the gangster governor who comes in and gets things done and makes sure that all the votes are in line. So you have this problem. You have extreme right-wing Republicans. You know, the Republican Party embraced the Tea Party in bed with the devil. They don't know how to get him out now.
Right.
So, and
that's right.
And so you have that
won't
faction
raise taxes
that
under
refuses
any,
to raise taxes under any circumstances.
For anything.
So I don't know how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
Stephen Henderson for governor.
No, thank you. I have too many jobs already.
You do, don't you?
I can't do another one. All right. Huel Perkins, anchor on Fox 2 News in Detroit and host of Let It Rip. Thanks for being here on Detroit Today.
And we hope to see you on Let It Rip very soon. I know you have five jobs.
I was going
to
say, if I can find another room for a sixth or seventh thing, I will come back on Let It Rip.
We will certainly call you, Stephen.
All right. Thank you for being here.
Much success. Great show.
All right. Coming up, do you believe in ghosts? Maybe you should. We'll find out why next. Stay with us on Detroit Today. Minutes past the hour and about 24 more so hours before Halloween, before kids put on their costumes, go out and trick-or-treat and party. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET, and I am Stephen Henderson. Do you believe in ghosts? Have you ever entered a building and had the hair stand up on the back of your neck or on your arms? Do tales of spirits and the beyond make your blood run cold? With Halloween right around the corner, we thought we would hear some really good ghost stories here on Detroit Today. So joining us now to tell some of those stories and debunk some others is Mickey Lyons. She's a Detroit historian and a freelance writer. She also runs tours of suspected haunted sites in the city. Mickey, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you, Stephen.
Yeah, I grew up downtown, sort of close to close to Lafayette Park, and close to Elmwood Cemetery, which, when I was a kid, was one of my favorite places to go. They, for some reason, I can remember taking field trips there in school, and I'm not sure why they thought that was a cool thing to do with little kids, but I've been there a couple times. I always thought, well, you know, if there's a haunted place, that would be it, right? There might be ghosts wandering around cemetery, and that's, I think, one of the oldest cemeteries here in Detroit, so that adds to that whole spooky sort of nature of it, the old tombstones, the old crypts. Am I right about that? Is Elmwood one of the places
it
that you
totally
take people?
Is. It is. So in addition to being one of Detroit's older cemeteries, it's definitely not the oldest, but it's one of the older cemeteries. It was also the site of a famous battle in 1763 as part of Pontiac's Rebellion.
Right.
So a whole lot of people got, in addition to being buried there, got slaughtered
there. Other people got killed there.
Exactly.
Right.
So,
and so they
definitely
may be haunting,
totally haunted.
Right.
And the other side of the fence in Mount Elliott Cemetery, there is a famous veiled green lady, you know, one of Detroit's cemetery specters.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you were right. It's totally haunted.
See, I knew it. I knew it. So tell me about, first tell me about your tours. I had not heard about this. I didn't know there were many suspected haunted sites in Detroit, but I guess we shouldn't be any different than any other city, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're over 300 years old, you know, since we've been colonized, and there's a whole lot of history packed into those years. So, all sorts. So many stories, in fact, that 3 hours, the three-hour tour
three-hour tour of haunted sites.
Yeah,
so
and
give
I
me an
have
idea
to talk really fast.
To get it all in three
and
hours.
And I run out of time.
So tell me about what some of these sites are. Are these places that I'm going and that I should stop going?
No, absolutely. You should keep going there and keep telling the stories. One of my favorite stories that people love talking about in Detroit is the haunted Masonic Temple. Because, you know, it's the Masonic. It's the largest Masonic temple in the world. Everyone says the legend, the ghost story of the Masonic is that the architect, George Mason, who built the place in 1926, because of the great stock market crash during the Depression, allegedly threw himself off of the roof the day after Black Monday. committed suicide and has been haunting the place ever since.
Oh my gosh.
Totally
That's
not true.
That's a terrible story.
It's totally not true.
It's not true.
He lived to the ripe old age of 80 something years old, continued to be rich.
Is that right?
Yeah.
See, sometimes it's that people just attach themselves to something
yes.
that makes it scary or sort of interesting.
And, you know, you take an old building, you take an old place. And you add in, you know, your typical tropes of, you know, depression or, you know, cemetery, and you have an instant ghost story. Sometimes they're true, sometimes they're not.
Yeah. This is 101.9 WDET Detroit Today. I am Stephen Henderson. My guest is Mickey Lyons, who is a Detroit historian and a freelance writer who runs tours of suspected haunted sites in Detroit. We are talking about the best ghost stories here in Southeast Michigan. And if you want to join the conversation, talk to us about Halloween, talk us about trick-or-treating, talk to us about haunted sites, places that you go or have been that you feel like are haunted, give us a call, 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. Peter in Detroit, welcome to Detroit Today.
Well, thanks, Stephen. I can give you two.
Okay.
Back in the 1970s when I was growing up in Northwest Detroit, there was a lady on, it was on Woodingham. She used to give out a russet potato. And, you know, you come home from Halloween and you dump your candy on the bed and there'd be this great big potato.
Oh,
and it was
gosh.
The weirdest thing. And what was even weirder was when she either moved or died, then the first Halloween when we dumped your candy on the bed and there was no potato, you're like, wait, where's my potato?
What happened to my potato?
I also worked in a haunted house here in Detroit. I used to work for the Detroit Urban League. The Detroit Urban League is housed in Albert Kahn's house. Albert Kahn died in that house.
Oh, wow.
They held his shiva in that house, and he still lives in that house. I used to hear him at night when I was, you know, sometimes working on a grant or something. The stairs were creaky. You could hear him walking up and down the stairs. When I knew I was the only person in the building.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard that.
I tell you what I did. I stood up one day. I said, listen, I know you're here. As long as you don't show yourself to me, we'll be okay. And we were fine.
That's right. He'll leave you alone. You got to show that respect, right? I'm wondering, Peter, do you think that the woman who was giving out potatoes was tricking you? Or what did she think that was a treat?
Well, you know, we always wondered about that. But my mom said in other countries, you know, they gave you stuff that you needed. It wasn't because, you know, in the United States, we had candy abound. You don't have candy in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Not a lot of it anyway.
Yeah.
So they would give you from what they had. You might get carrots or potatoes or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would have eaten the potato. Did you ever cut it open and see what was in it?
No, we ate the potato.
You ate the potato.
That's a myth about razor blades and apples. Who thinks you put a razor blade in a potato?
That's right. All right, Peter, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Roberta in Royal Oak. Welcome to Detroit Today, Roberta.
Hi. I want to tell you about a custom that was followed here. I grew up in Royal Oak. And this is back in the 40s. But I understand, actually, there was a discussion about it on your station one time. It was in the whole Detroit area. We didn't say, I'm 76 years old, so this was in the 40s. We didn't say trick or treat. We said, help the poor.
Oh,
and
really?
We dragged that out. And we called it going begging. Now, what
which is really a much more apt description of what happens on Halloween, right?
Well, what I heard, and again, this was a few years ago on your station, was that it was kind of peculiar to this area, as far as the United States, but they think we got it from Canada, and somehow, I don't know whether I heard this or I thought this. It could come from the whole Guy Fawkes thing. Anyway, that's a whole other thing
right.
That they did in England,
wow.
You know, and give a penny for the guy or whatever. And anyway, but that's my memory
wow.
of saying, and I'll
help
do it
the poor.
Said,
yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
That's very cool. All right, Roberta, thank you very much for that call. Mickey Lyons, you know, the first house I owned in Detroit, I was supposed to be haunted. It was in Woodbridge.
Okay.
It had an elderly lady had lived there for a very long time. And the owners before me had bought it after she died. And she died in the house in the dining room. And was left there for a while. She lived by herself and wasn't found for a while. And there was a stain in the wood floor from that everyone in the neighborhood, of course, said was where she came to rest. And my most vivid memory of this is, in fact, a dinner party that I had in that house. And one of the neighbors came over, and her 10-year-old son was sitting at the table and said, "Hey, have you seen Mrs. So-and-so around your house?" Mm-hmm. And I said, well, no, what are you talking about? And he pointed to the stain in the floor, that was her, and then told me about the second floor of the house had been reconfigured in the renovation. And he said, you know, she still is upstairs operating in the old configuration of the house. So you can hear her opening and closing doors that used to exist in the house and are no longer there.
Oh.
And I can remember looking across the table at this 10-year-old kid with, I'm sure, a look of sheer horror on my face, because I was like, how does this 10-year-old kid know this story about my house? But that really is sort of the way those things take root. Is there something maybe half true or partially true and a little spooky, and it grows into this this lore, and 10-year-old kids come to your house and scare the bejesus out of you with it.
Yep, pretty much. I guess it's probably a good thing that you did not know that story before you bought the house and moved in.
I really would have thought about it, right?
yeah. There's supposedly a website where you can find out if anyone has died in your house before.
Oh, really? See, I'm not sure I would
go do that. And I do no desire. Nope. Strange enough things happen in my place. I don't want to know.
So tell me, how do you determine whether a place is really haunted or is not?
Oh, Lord. Yeah, I have to say I'm a skeptic, but I'm sort of, you know, X-Files-y. I want to believe.
You
want to
believe?
But I need a heck of a lot of proof.
Yeah.
Really. Really, what I like most about it is the stories. And we fall into these patterns of telling stories. You know, you take this one element of somebody died in the building or somebody famous. You know, you got your Albert Kahns, you got, you know, you have your lots of dead bodies, you have your violent episode, you know, you take that and you add, you know, a little bit of speculation,
right?
One person's strange experience, and then a whole lot of retellings, and then all of a sudden you have a famous ghost story.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Well, all right. Mickey Lyons, Detroit historian and freelance writer. Also, you run your tours of suspected haunted sites here in the city. Tell me, how can people come take your tour?
Yeah, the bad news is they can't.
They can't?
No. It's actually, I was running them with the Detroit Bus Company.
Yeah.
And we did a whole bunch of dates last year. This year, we only put up a few.
Yeah.
Because I've been busy doing other things. And I'm doing one tonight and one tomorrow, but they're totally sold out.
Oh, they're sold out?
Yeah.
All right. Well, but that's good news for you. Well,
yeah, exactly.
All right. Mickey Lyons, thank you very much for being here on Detroit Today. Coming up, we're going to get a spooky preview of John Mosier's Halloween special tonight on WDET. Goblins and ghouls, things that go bump in the night. You get all of them and more on WDET's Modern Music with John Mosier every Halloween. John digs through dusty old crates of records and finds hidden and forgotten frightful gems to bring a unique listening experience in October. Here to preview tonight's freaky program is John Mosier, coming up in a few minutes.
I'm Amy Miller, and this is Curiosity, where WDET answers your questions about everything Detroit. Today's question comes from John Walensky.
My question for Curiosity is, where were the dead of Detroit buried prior to the opening of Elmwood Cemetery, and are there any unmarked graves and burial grounds scattered throughout the city?
For a query like this, we need appropriate music. As for John's question,
there are people under Congress, Jefferson Avenue. You're not going to find everyone.
So now we know where at least some of the bodies are buried. But Archdiocese of Detroit archivist Heidi Christine mentioned only two places. In a minute, we'll uncover some of the other locations. If we start with Detroit and go back to July of 1701, Antoine Cadillac built Fort Pontchartrain and a large French Catholic population followed. According to Christine, the first cemetery was located outside Fort Pontchartrain, but she says not everyone was accounted for.
In the very, very early days, wherever there was open space, people did their best, but if you died, you had to be buried. And we don't know how many people are known only to God, as the saying goes.
That's because Christine says people were buried soon after death and often without a coffin.
A lot of people at the time were probably wrapped in shrouds in some kind of material and just buried that way.
So the truth is, bodies were scattered throughout the area around Fort Pontchartrain and also at Woodward and Larned after the British arrived around 1812 and built a Protestant cemetery. As the city grew into a thriving community during the first half of the 1800s, graves were regularly disturbed during construction. For example, Christine says the reconstruction of Congress Street meant plowing through at least one graveyard.
In 1837, the current Congress Street was straightened out. The road, as it was straightened, ran through what was part of a Catholic burial ground. Some of those bodies were moved, but it was assumed that there are people somewhere under the street.
By that time, there were also other cemeteries, including what's believed to be the first city-owned graveyard. In 1827, a corner of the Ribbon Farm owned by the Bobian family was purchased for cemetery land. It was equally divided for Catholics and Protestants. It was referred to as the City Cemetery or the Clinton Street Cemetery because of its location at Clinton and Gratiot. The first cholera outbreak here killed a couple hundred Detroiters, which was nearly 10% of the population at the time. And it contributed to how quickly the Clinton Street Cemetery filled up. By 1834, the city purchased another piece of land close by at Russell and Gratiot. Over the years, Russell Street Graveyard became unkept and dilapidated. It was closed in 1869, and as was the practice of just up and moving the deceased, 4,500 graves were moved to Elmwood and Mount Elliott cemeteries to make room for the development of the farmers market that came to be known as Eastern Market. So, yes, Eastern Market is built on the site of one of Detroit's original graveyards. With all of its growth, Detroit really needed a large space and consolidated plot for the deceased to rest in peace once and for all. So according to Steele Jensen, co-director of the Polonica Americana Research Institute and a genealogist, the two cemeteries that actually got the credit for being Detroit's first came into existence at nearly the same time. They're right next to each other because back then, Catholics and Protestants didn't mingle much, even after death.
Elmwood was created, Jefferson, near the street Mount Elliott. And so that was already in place when the Irish bought the property for Mount Elliott Cemetery. They were calling it Trinity Cemetery or the Irish Cemetery.
The churches were so segregated when it came time to burial, Jensen says there's at least one notable Detroiter who ended up on the wrong side of the fence.
You shouldn't go against the wishes of Father Gabriel Richard. He knew that Joseph Campo was selling liquor to the Indians on Sundays, and he told him to stop, and the commerce did not stop. And so he was not allowed to be buried in the Catholic cemetery. So there is a fence, even today, that runs between Elmwood Cemetery and Mount Elliott. And so Joseph Campo is on one side and his wife is on the other.
So we know that there are actually bodies buried hither and thither in Detroit. But what about those people who weren't really supposed to be buried? Wayne State Department of Mortuary Science Director Mark Evely says it did occasionally happen.
They would bury someone with a bell at the top of the grave and a string or a rope that went all the way down into the grave, into the casket, so that if a person really was buried alive, they could pull the string and ring the bell.
Steele Jensen says that's where terms like dead ringer and saved by the bell came in, and
that's where the graveyard shift term comes from, that somebody had to be there to listen for the bells.
With that, we end this Halloween episode of Curiosity. Thanks to Richard Bach, author of Boneyards, Detroit Underground, for a great resource. You can find more stories like this by visiting WDET.org/curious. And there you can also let us know what you're curious about in Detroit and the region. I'm Amy Miller.
All right, when we come back, we are going to talk with John Mosier, WDET's Modern Music, about those hidden gems, Halloween gems, that you can listen to on his show tonight. Stay with us on Detroit Today. Some people, Halloween is about what's scary or what's sweet, but Halloween used to also just be about what's campy, what's goofy kinds of fun. Think about Count Scary, the guy from the middle 1980s used to dress up like a sort of vampire and run around in a 50s Chevy around town and say silly things and do silly stuff. If you're really into that edge of Halloween, the sort of fun, campy edge of it, then you want to listen to John Mosier, host of Modern Music, on Friday nights on WDET, tonight from 9 to 11. He is going to share with us some of these gems that he's found in our record crates and his, the forgotten side of Halloween. And it's great to have John Mosier of Modern Music here on WDET right now on Detroit Today.
You mean that doesn't scare you?
Laura,
by the way, Laura was doing the wrong dance. You're supposed to do the swim to that.
Oh, yeah, what is
there
the
you go.
Swim?
Yeah, she's doing it.
Laura Weber Davis, our producer here on WDET, really getting into the Halloween spirit.
These records. You can't see them on the radio, but I have them all on my Facebook page. By Frankie Stein and his ghouls, you could see the covers, Stephen, are so fun.
Yes.
This was a studio creation in the 1960s. That one was 1964, the first record. And the idea was every song had a dance associated with it.
That's
and then
cool,
these,
right?
You know, horrible sound effects.
Yeah. Right. So tell me how you got interested in this part of Halloween. It's different than the way some people relate to it. But for a long time, it was the sort of dominant culture, especially for like teenagers, I want to think.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was a kid, this record here, this is the actual copy. I have several copies of this, and you folks out there probably know the record when I say blood-curdling terror horror sounds to make you shiver, because every kid in the 70s had a copy
had
of this
that, right?
on Pickwick Records. This was the actual copy that I had as a kid, and my parents used to let me play it out of the front of the house, out of the den window on Halloween night. And you know, it's those records that came out principally in the 60s and 70s, where one side was a night in a haunted house and the other side was all banded with,
right.
you know, wind and shutters or whatever. And, you know, and so as a kid, this was a big part of my childhood. And like you, I went through one Batman suit after another from the Sears catalog.
Right. And again, not the modern cool Batman. This is the
no.
weirdo Batman was, in that very strange outfit with that really shiny cape.
Yeah. So, you know, Halloween, obviously, as a kid, like most kids, Halloween was really huge. Well, when I got into radio in later years, especially in college radio, you know, sound collage experimental radio was really fun. When I did the graveyard shift, which now I know the origin of graveyard shift. When I did the graveyard shift here many years ago, I would do a yearly Halloween special, which
yeah.
was more contemporary music, you know, if something just sort of fit into the theme of Halloween,
yeah.
I would play it. And then we had a radio theater segment as part of that show called When Radio Was King. That was all vintage science fiction radio theater. And so I would play War of the Worlds or an episode of Suspense or Inner
yeah.
Sanctum or something. As I got into it more and more, I really delved into this whole world of the novelty song, you know, sort of inspired by the whole 60s Monster Kid generation
sure.
kind of stuff, and started collecting all of these vinyl records. And the stuff that they put on record for Halloween is really entertaining. So I just started collecting. And then as the show got condensed down to a 2-hour show, it became just that. So pretty much it's all novelty music and film trailers.
Yeah. Is that sounds to make you shiver? Yeah. Is that what people who grew up here in the 70s recognize any of that from the Channel 20 thriller double feature music? No, that's the Led Zeppelin.
That was Led Zeppelin.
Right. They used the Led Zeppelin Whole Lot of Lovin' solo for that. Right?
I was probably like, I think we're the same age. I was probably like you on a Saturday afternoon, dad yelling at me to go outside and do yard work.
1 o'clock,
I had the curtains,
you sat down and
Channel
watched.
20. Yeah. And it was a thriller double feature.
I would watch sometimes, but I got to be honest, sometimes I would not watch because I'd be like, that's just way too scary.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to deal with that.
There's
right?
a film that changed my life in I don't remember what year it aired on, the thriller double feature, Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things.
Yeah, I remember that movie.
and super campy. The soundtrack is really fun. It's all done like on a Moog synthesizer.
Yeah.
It's a really creepy soundtrack.
See, I can remember talking with my friends about that movie and being, we were scared. I mean, as little kids, that was one of the scariest movies we ever saw, and we were like, oh, not watching that one again.
Yeah.
You also discovered some movie trailers and my favorite, we're going to take a listen to the trailer for it, but my favorite title is Monsters Crash the PJ Party. I mean, you can just picture what kind of film that was. Let's take a listen to the trailer for that.
It's so scary, we dare you to see The Monsters Crash the Pajama Party, the first movie ever filmed in horror vision, Hollywood's latest miracle. You'll scream as fiendish movie monsters actually become alive, then crash right out of the screen, go into the audience, and carry screaming girls from their seats right back into the picture to become part of the movie. We warn you, horror vision is not 3D. The movie monsters become real flesh and blood. Be sure to see The Monsters Crash the Pajama Party in horror vision and color.
Yeah.
We dare you to see screaming girls pulled from the theater and into the film.
They get pulled right into the film.
Right into the film.
That's what horror vision is all about.
What year is that?
I don't know what year that film was from. I should find out. But I thought that sort of added to the whole aesthetic of Halloween for me. It sort of exists in the 1950s, 1960s, somewhere in there, and all of the novelty music and the film trailers just fit in there perfectly. So I play a ton of them throughout the show.
Yeah, and you know, when you think about the sort of time in which these things existed, it was a different time, and what was scary then is really different from what's scary now because of what's really scary now and then. I mean, there are some real differences. If you made something like that now, it's not just that it would be campy, it would just be ridiculous. Right?
And they wouldn't let you say
screaming girls.
They'll pull you out of the theater and into the movie, and you know,
that's right.
Somebody in legal would flag that.
That's right.
There'd be an issue with that.
This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson. My guest is John Mosier, host of Modern Music on Friday nights on WDET. We are talking about the old campy Halloween, the sort of silly side of Halloween that John has discovered through old records and old movies. John, I mentioned Count Scary, but I feel like he fits into this and really was the sort of end of that we saw on the
that
local
the
scene here. I mean, he was really popular when I was about 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. I can remember being in the U of D high school marching band and having Count Scary come out to perform with us.
Right.
I think lots of people have that kind of memory of things like that. But then that ended, and that was sort of the last we saw of that kind of fun, campy stuff on Halloween.
And you know what? It's funny that you mention that, because I think my show is in a way a tribute to some of that local programming that we had on television.
Oh, that was so great. Channel 20, Channel 50.
Sir Graves Gastly was my absolute favorite. Right. Of course, we had the Ghoul down south and of here, and then Count Scary later on. And yeah, this was a time when Zacherly, the great Zacherly, who's still alive, he's 97 now or something.
Is
like that,
that. Right?
I'll play his music. He ended up making records later on. He was a TV horror show host. But those locally programmed horror shows, when they had the host and they had the gimmick, That stuff was great, and I sort of feel like my show is once a year sort of carries that torch a little bit too.
Let's hear a little bit of another track here.
Do you want to hear a song?
Witchcraft in the Air.
Oh man, this is great. So this is a piece of Detroit right here, because this is Betty LaVette. This is Detroit's own Betty LaVette from 1963.
All right.
I'm cooking up a magic brew just to put a spell on it.
That was apparently Betty LaVette, Detroit's own Betty LaVette, singing Witchcraft in the Air, one of the old sort of campy Halloween theme songs that are part of John Mosier, host of Modern Music on Friday Nights, his sense of Halloween here in Detroit. Betty LaVette is a great Detroit icon, of course, John, and that's a really interesting. But you're right. It used to be that your local sort of stars and people that you knew got really involved with Halloween that way.
Yeah, everything tonight from a little piece of Detroit was fun to throw in there. Everything tonight from the mid 50s. Through to probably the early 70s is what you'll hear tonight. And lots of novelty music, lots of film trailers, lots of layered vinyl sound effects under my voice. It's going to be really fun.
Yeah, and people can people call in like they did today and tell you crazy Halloween stories?
That would be fun, wouldn't it?
I'd love that. We got some really great stories from our listeners today.
It's been a really fun show.
Yeah. All right, so that's going to do it for Detroit Today. Go trick-or-treating. Have fun. Stay safe. That's right. We will see you back here on Monday, and listen to John Mosier tonight from 9 to 11 on WDET. For Modern Music. We're going out on a song called All Black and Hairy, one of the campy sort of songs that make up this Halloween retrospective that John Mosier's putting together on Modern Music tonight. That's going to do it for this on WDET Detroit, Wayne State's public radio station. We'll see you on Monday.
Give a crack.